Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, that's a bunch of horse shit. Lando Calrissian was a black guy, you know. He got to fly the Millennium Falcon. What's the matter with you?
Who said that?
I did. Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fantasy.
Fuck Lando Calrissian, Uncle Tom, nigga. Only some white boy got to invoke the Holy Trilogy. But this. Those movies are about how the white man keeps the brother man down, even in a galaxy far, far away. Check this shit. You got Cracker Farm Boy, Luke Skywalker, Nazi poster boy, blonde hair, blue eyes. And then you got Darth Vader, the blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Shut the fuck up. Now, Vader, he's a spiritual brother, you know, down with the Force and all that good shit. Then there's Cracker Skywalker. Gets his hands on a lightsaber, and the boy decides he's going to run the fucking universe. Gets a whole clan whites together. And they going to bust up Vader's hood, the Death Star. Now, what the fuck do you call that?
Intergalactic Civil War?
Gentrification! They going to drive out the black element to make the galaxy, quote, unquote, safe for white folks.
And Jedi's the most
insulting installment. Because Vader's beautiful black visage is sullied when he pulls off his mask to reveal a feeble, crusty old white man. They're trying to tell us that deep inside, we all want to be white.
Well, isn't that true?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logic.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
This is the top of the month, July 5th, and of course we must do, we're compelled to do, a Grindhouse mashup show. That's why you heard the Afro Nerd intro. And this is the show, 2 hours of fire, 2 hours of facts, 2 hours of fun, where we have the uncanny Daryl B, who I have yet to beam up yet, but we have him in attendance for both shows. So we're doing a mixtape slash mashup show where we mix up, or rather things become blurred, B-L-E-R-D, truly blurred, between Afro Nerd Radio and the Comic Shop. So we're going to talk about pop culture, political culture, and pulp culture, all in one. And you can call in if you like. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. I was also remiss in not mentioning the passing of two phenomenal musicians, so Horace Silver, and of course, Bobby Womack. Wow, we're talking about heavyweights. The artistic community will be suffering, as well as the musical community. I mean, we're talking about really heavyweight musicians coming from the African-American experience. So I'll talk about them briefly after the break. We're going to go to a quick groove. We always start the show at the top of the show with a quick groove. Because of time constraints, I did not get enough time to actually upload any Bobby Womack music. But because of the show that we do, I have Bobby Womack anyway, in a sense. one of its last releases was with the Gorillaz. And this is a cut that's very much in the urban alternative, Afro-punk, black rock scene. Gorillaz with Bobby Womack, and this cut's called Stylo. I've played it so many times, so why not now? The Gorillaz with the late, great Bobby Womack. We'll be back in a few moments, and again, let's groove.
Love electricity, shockwave central, power on the motherboard, yes. Push up, overload, legendary, heavy glow, sunshine, thunder roll, keep this on. Yes, the lantern burn, burn bad easy, and broadcast so raw and neatly. Thunder roll, sunshine, work it out, out, out.
Vibe so right, I tell you I gotta get it. Grew so tall, though I used to be a midget. And we go, got steep, low, booking agents so we never do a free show. Color fear not, confidence can make fear drop. In the game, on a plane till our ears pop. I look at life like, what's the purpose of it all? Stick with us and you'll never see your budget fall. Stay true, they can't corrupt us all. We fresh in LAX and still my mother calls. In Cali, I'm a big man, Paul Gasol. Mathematically speaking, I think it's problem solved. I wish I had time to address challenges, but it's not enough space on my calendars. Head to tail, I'm living very monetary, living very visionary, searching for the meaning like a dictionary.
Oh, Stylo, go for blossom in your soul. When you know your heart is when the makeup flies up from the bottom in your eyes, and I know the twilight night, what so broken hearted.
Right now, here's what we got to do.
Sound of a vengeance, I keep it moving, I'm just gearing up my engine. You don't know Chitty, and you don't gotta mention I'm inching, prime minister shit Winston, but I'm still a dog, bring a kennel in, we could serve anybody that wanted, we Wimbledon 2010, the name scribbling, rap playing ball, I'm spitting it and I'm dribbling. Hey, lost focus for a minute, here's Ritalin, think about this and I'm thinking about that, like how my life would be if I never wrote a rap, would I load a gap, wanna say something that probably hold it back. It's what I owe to rap, cause before my future was Coca-Cola black. And doing what you love makes your heart race, and whenever we do it, we doing it at our pace.
Oh,
that's it.
Go for blossom,
I like that.
In your soul, when you know your heart is light, electric is the love. When the mix
back once again. That was an homage to the late great. Really, it's a pale homage, I will confess, because we did not have enough time to upload all of, or at least more of his most notable work. But that was his latest work with the Gorillaz. The cut, of course, is called Stylo, and that was Bobby Womack. I think Mos Def might have also made an appearance on that, as well as the Gorillaz. All right, folks, this is the Grindhouse, the special mixtape slash mashup edition of the program. So without further ado, you know, I do this show with some pretty stellar compatriots. First up, we have the captain. Captain, it's your time. Let's get to it. You're needed on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there is the uncanny Daryl Green.
Everybody's tracking LeBron. Who is he going with? Who is he going for? Where is he going? Where is he going? Same with Melo. Where is he going? Where is he going? I could tell you what Afro Nerd is. We're in the house, baby. Back to you.
Gentlemen, we have a lot to get into. And as you know, this is a mashup program, so we're going to be going back and forth between the Transformers flick and whether Obama is the worst president in history. That's where we're going to go with this thing. There's a lot to unpack for a pop pulp political show. So it is what it is. Let's go into the Transformers discussion first. Transformers, Age of Extinction. I believe it's the fourth outing of the franchise. This time it's the Shia LaBeouf. We have Marky Mark himself, Mark Wahlberg. Pretty lengthy film, over 2.5 hours. To me, it's more of the same. Michael Bay still helming this thing. Didn't like that. I don't even know if I was entertained or not. I don't know. I know it looks good. I mean, there's something about it just I don't know. It is so much like the living cartoon. You know, as a kid, I remember was the robots and the humans are always running. They were running from something. And that's exactly what this program was about. So, and then you have the literal voice, the same voice of the cartoon, does the living live action part of it. So, the transition between cartoon and live action CGI almost seamless. But I just recollect in the 80s, the robots were running with the humans, and this is the same. Some shining moments here and there, some shining moments, but I don't know. I think they need to get rid of Michael Bay. I don't like Michael Bay as a director. He's too much of a corporate guy. I think he should just make movies for studio heads only, not the public, just for corporate board meetings. That's the type of movie that I thought I was going to. Something that you would see if you're in the corporate matrix. And you have to sit for 2.5 hours to be lectured on your company. They should have that in the background somewhere. That's just me. That's it. I have nothing else to say about it. I mean, you know, Daryl, I'm intrigued. What's your thoughts about Age of Extinction?
Well, it was better than two. What?
Excuse me.
It was better than two of the Michael Bay sets. Technically, I still consider Transformers the movie to be the first Transformers movie. So. This was two. This was better than two of the Michael Bay sets, all right? It's neck and neck with three, all right? I give Kelsey Grammer credit. I give Stanley Tucci credit. The reason why is I forget the name of the guy from the first three who was the secret agent for Section 7. So anybody out there, if you got his name, give it to me. The Italian
dude. What's the right take? Yeah, do the right thing. One of the brothers.
Yes.
I forgot his name.
All right. Stanley Tucci does a good job stepping into that sort of comic relief role. All right. Even though it's strange, I give Michael Bay credit for finally having a kick-ass female in one of these. His Asian aide or whatever, because that's a great fight scene. That's beautiful. All right. And Kelsey Grammer plays a great bad guy. It does. That's great. Did Michael Bay ever watch a Marky Mark film before? And the reason why I say it is because he had Mark Wahlberg act like Marky Mark. He didn't have him act like how he was in Lone Survivor. He didn't have him act like how he was in The Italian Job. He didn't have him act like how he acted in The Big Hit. I'm just giving you action stuff that Mark Wahlberg has done where you could see Mark Wahlberg as an action star, not a whiny little emphasis on the – and folks at home, if this is your first time, know that I just self-edited myself. Why do I need whiny females? Dad, no, I want to go out, no. We spent 10 minutes on this. In a Transformers film. Okay. All right. That's cool. That's cool. Okay. So I guess her boyfriend should have stones, right? Her boyfriend should have stones. He wants to bow up and convince Mark Wahlberg he wants to date his daughter. And the first thing he does is run like a... Yes, he ran like a... All right, you know what? I'll just say it like this. I'll say it like this. This movie was good for everybody that wanted Optimus Prime to be a murderous thug. He can't be that good. This is the movie for you. Because every other line from Optimus Prime, and you know what? He's validated because of what happens to some of the Transformers in this. He's validated for that thought, but that isn't my Optimus Prime. Children of the 80s looking at this film feel like, you know what, Michael Bay couldn't possibly have on our childhood anymore. No, he didn't just on your childhood. He took a giant-ass leak on it, too. Look, somebody else take the franchise. All right, let me give it over to Cap. Afroner, give it to Cap quick.
Well, hold on one thing, though. I just want to mention this for edification for our audience. John Turturro, that's the actor you were talking about, from the Turturro brothers, John and Nicholas Turturro, started out from Spike Lee's Jungle Fever, Do the Right Thing, and they're also Rosedale, Queens natives. So, excellent actors, both of them.
Yeah, so Captain. Thanks to him for that.
Captain, your thoughts?
Well, I thought the movie had weak transitions from scene to scene. I thought the script was poor. It was very weak. It was lazy. And I thought the movie was very long, which also took away from the movie also. But I thought the last 25 minutes of the movie was very good. It decided to finish up strong considering how the movie was going. That overall he said and put together, the movie was just passing. You know, it was just passing. It's like a lot of movies that come out on Fridays during the blockbuster time, which is summer. They give you something that's very, very glossy. And for most part, it grabs the audience. You know, but with people who have a little more intellect or have a little more, they know a little bit more about the backdrop with these stories, they're getting a little bit tired of it because it's same thing over and over and over. Simply put, Transformers is like a car that looks really nice. You say, oh, amazing car. Then you look underneath the engine, it's a putt-putt engine. Or like the girl that's super attractive. Then she starts to talk and she's just, when she opens her mouth and her attitude, it starts to distort her look from your It just distorts your senses when you start to look at it because it just starts to take away. That's pretty much how Transformers is in this movie right here. It's just a so-so effort, and that's it. Nothing more. There's no substance there.
Well,
back over to you, Sir Afronerd.
Actually, Afronerd, when you get done with your transition, I have a question for Captain Kirk because I have a suspicion, but I want him to validate it on this movie.
Well, go ahead and ask him.
All right. Cap, do you think Bay and the picture company heard us fans saying the natural transition would be Unicron? It has to be Unicron next. Unicron would be the next transition. And they purposely put the picture in the trailer of the Hong Kong getting sucked up by the thing just to entice us in, saying, I'll give it one more shot. It looks like Unicron's in play. And then did the 180, did the old switcheroo on the fan base?
Well, that's a strong possibility. That's a strong possibility. The whole lore with Transformers, and that's what we got in the first movie, is the way it looks. That's what we have to understand. The first movie, you're like, oh, I have to see this, because we didn't see anything like that at the given time. So that's what brings you in the movie. But now, after you show this time and time and again, you have to be able to step it up some way. How can you step it up? Unless the technology gets better, then you could step it up that way, the same way you did in Transformers 1, or you have to spend the time and do the due diligence with writing a much tighter script. It's just not formula anymore, you see, at that given point. They didn't do that. They didn't do it. You know, so that's why we got this movie here. I said, let's go. We're going to get the people anyway. It's Transformers. That's all.
All right. I see our friend from Chi-Town wants to weigh in, our resident cineast, Sergio Mims from Shadow and Act. I'm going to bring him in just one more moment. I was just thinking about this series, is that, you know, I'm not so sure if the studio heads are concerned with the thinking man or the thinking man or thinking woman or thinking child, because we seem to be going against, you know, I mean, you hear this on the internet. I've seen a lot of criticisms levied toward the movie, but it didn't stop us from making $400 million this early in the game. If it's making $400 million plus now, by the end of this whole run, this is probably going to be nearing a $1 billion picture for a movie that critically stinks. So I have to agree or concur with Captain that this is so much of the more of the same. You know, I believe I sent an email to you and Daryl, I thought maybe a week ago, 2 weeks ago. There's some budding director, filmmaker that showed his robotic short. Did I send this thing to you? There's some kind of robotic short that gave more fluid movement.
Yes, you did.
He did something. You saw that, right? He did something that looks like it really could revolutionize CGI, but it even goes deeper. It makes these movies cheaper, more efficient to make, and more fluid. So you're actually able to make these movies look more realistic on the cheap. So as great as the CGI was in this last iteration of the Transformers franchise, theoretically, but I don't know why we can't seem to get a better story. I mean, yeah, we understand that this is you know, so it's coming from an 80s cartoon, but that doesn't mean that the premise isn't an interesting premise. It doesn't mean that the audience, fourth time out, might want something better. I would like to see Michael Bay detached from the franchise. I think he should have been detached two movies ago, honestly.
Hell,
but
they have the same problem Superman has. They have the same problem Superman has, okay? Which is, we got to make him more human. We want him more human. No. You want to know what would help Transformers? Get off of Earth. You want to know what would help Superman? Go away from Earth so that you could see the full power set, so you could get a sense of the creatures, all right? But no, we have to do this on Earth. Which means I got to waste time hearing all of these humans' backstories when all I want to see is robots crush one another or fight or do amazing transformations. Or here's something new and innovative. Transform into vehicles that aren't commercially licensed. How about using your imagination? The best thing about Transformers, the movie, all right, the animated one, because we got to see Cup. We got to see Hot Rod. We got to see Unicron. We got to see Galvatron. Not a white truck from liquid floating parts of metal that they stole from Terminator 2. Not that Galvatron. Galvatron, a huge honking cannon Galvatron. Transformers fans want to see great transformations, and they want to see great robot battles. The problem is, you spent in this movie, Captain, would you say they spent like 75 minutes doing the human story? 75 minutes before we got the action really rolling?
I agree with that.
Listen, it's Transformers. This ain't rocket science. The only way you could screw Transformers is to put in characters that the public doesn't connect with. And guess what? You put Mark Wahlberg as a whiny, broke inventor who's overprotective of his double whiny daughter and her coward boyfriend that he doesn't approve of because he had her at like 16 or 17 years old. Come again? This is Transformers.
Now, let's go to our friend and caller laying or waiting in abeyance. I want to say just one other thing, though. You know, going back to the corporate structure, you know, this reminds me a little bit of what's the film that – I think Sergio loves this film as well, the film that's out of the U.K. that we always reference, the sci-fi invasion flick In the Hood.
Attack of the Block?
Yeah, Attack the Block. Attack the Block – was interesting because someone got the novel idea, ladies and gentlemen, that maybe, just maybe, aliens might actually set foot in a minority community as opposed to the Midwest 99% of the time or suburbia or exurbia 99% of the time. I think this next movie that's really a E.T. ripoff, once a game, aliens know exactly what hoods to go to. They just know. They have excellent GPS, obviously. They'll never set foot on 125th Street. So I would have been interesting, that especially since they found a junked Optimus Prime. You mean to tell me
that would not have been? In a movie theater. And no one asked how a junk cab, a junk truck trailer was inside a movie theater without a big hole. Anyway, go ahead.
All right, let's bring in, sir. He's been waiting too long. Mr. Mims.
Right. Hello. How you doing?
Man. Nice to hear from you. Really good. How are you doing, by the way?
The procedure is next week.
With Godspeed, sir. But, with Godspeed.
Yeah. I'll be okay. I'll be out in 2 days. It's okay. It's minor. I've had ruptured appendices. I've been close to death, so this is minor. That was 15 years ago. But anyway, I will tell you up front, I have not seen Transformers 4. I have no interest in seeing it after seeing the last one, Transformers 3, which gave me a bloody headache. I couldn't take it anymore. I do the box office reports for Shadow and Act every Sunday. And, you know, last weekend, Transformers 4 was number one. It did $100 million, which isn't that good. Compared to other movies and compared to other Transformers, it's not that great. And the fact that so far this is the highest grossing film of the summer, I mean on a weekend, had the biggest opening at $100 million, when there have been many other films that have opened up much bigger, that shows you this year's not doing too good. Not doing too well, box office wise.
But isn't it $400 million, you know, with the international box office?
Right. It's doing more money in China. It has grossed more money in China, which is why a lot of the movie takes place in China.
Yeah,
because
they
know the audience.
Captain brought it up last week.
Right. Here's the thing. Edge of Tomorrow is a terrific movie. I think it's one of the best films of the summer. And it's struggling just to make $100 million in the United States. I don't get it.
Oh, hey, sir, it's easy.
What?
Captain came up with it, all right? These new audience, they don't want to think. Edge of Tomorrow, you have to think. You have to think. You wait for the DVD that you could go back to the references and all of that. You have to think. This one, you don't have to think.
I think in the case, in that case, I saw that movie and I would agree with Sergio. It really was a great film. I mean, more of a solid film. for a sci-fi film, I thought it was a solid effort. I thoroughly enjoyed myself looking at that film. The issue is,
right.
is its star. I think that Tom Cruise has just, he's just too weird. There's a vibe that he gets off that he's not relatable. And I think, you know,
well,
it's,
that
it's
could
just,
be true.
It's,
the
I
film
think
has
going on.
The film will probably break even because it is doing extremely well overseas, of course. It's doing great business in China. China's the market now. It's done very well in Europe. It's doing good in South America. Warner's will make its money back. It's not going to be a huge bust. But I wish the film was doing Transformers 4 money. But the thing about it is that I wrote the box office report, and you know I referenced this movie, and you know I don't get it. I swear to God, I don't understand the appeal of Transformers. Is it a generational thing? I don't get. Is it because you guys grew up with the toys? Is that it?
Well,
I don't know.
It's very much about nostalgia. I mean, you grew up looking at the cartoon in the early '80s. And then to see it, to actually have the guy that did the voice from the cartoons in the live action,
and then for it to be
self-realized. I mean, talking about visually, it's visually
yeah.
stunning. You know, so that's why I never thought you'd get to this period to see that.
Well, you see, here's the thing: it is a generational thing. When I was a young kid, we didn't want to see cartoons. We didn't want to see what kids saw. We wanted to see what our parents saw. I didn't want to see Saturday morning cartoons. I wanted to see The Tonight Show. I wanted to stay up late to see Johnny Carson do his risque jokes. I think last week, I came across a commercial for a toy that I had when I was growing up. And what the toy was, it was a .38 revolver. It was a toy .38 revolver where you could put bullets in it.
The caps. Well, bullets. I'm
right.
Caps.
And you put caps on it, and you had a holster.
Yeah.
Right. And we were like, that's what I had when I was a kid. I had guns. I had cars. I didn't have, G.I. Joe didn't come around that time. What made G.I. Joe different? It was the first doll for boys. But, you know, we didn't grow up with Transformers or things like that. We grew up with what we saw. We liked Westerns. We liked detective stories. We wanted to, you know, shoot the bad guys. That's what we had. And maybe
well,
it's a generational
listen.
Thing because I look,
well, Sergio,
and by the way. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say is that I hear what you're saying. I understand that because I'm a bit younger than you, but the captain and myself, we still came from a certain period where, you know, there was blaxploitation. You had early, even some
yeah,
of the early 80s
with.
Stuff is different. So it's a little different. I mean, I lament the passing of there's a certain masculine standard that you and I may be more familiar with that's just not being translated. I mean, they tried to do the Lone Ranger, and they just failed miserably. You know, instead of making it, if they made it more of an honest Western, I think it would have worked. An honest Western. But they tried to make this into Pirates of the Caribbean on land. That's what they
right.
wanted to do. They wanted another franchise on that level. They went for a money grab instead of making a solid picture. And that's what's happening with some of this stuff. And I think even some of the stuff that might be of a different generation, just because it's a different generation doesn't mean that it can't be good. This stuff, people still complain that this wasn't a good picture. I mean, you know.
But it doesn't matter because it's making money. And that's all that counts at the end.
That's
all that counts at the end. They're not going to do another Lone Ranger movie because that tanked.
No.
They're not going to do another John Carter movie because Walt Disney lost $200 million on that picture.
Yeah.
But they already announced plans for a Transformers 4. I mean, I'm sorry, a Transformers 5. 5.
Wow.
You know, which is why I keep waiting for the fall. There are a lot of movies coming out in the fall. It's like, I guess I'm an old guy now. I'm waiting for the fall because the fall, like, boy, this looks really interesting. An adult movie. Wow.
Well,
you
listen,
know, instead of Crash, Bam, Boom.
Well, there's another factor in this as well because let's think about it. You have some pretty moneyed well-established actors. When you talk about Stanley Tucci and you just mentioned him, Daryl.
Kelsey Grammer.
You know, I have to admit, Kelsey Grammer. Now, you know, you very rarely see him play a villain. I thought that his chops were pretty good, and he also. He's not, you know, he wants to be in the X-Men thing, so I'm glad to hear about that, if they would allow him. But the deal is that those guys rely, you're not going to hear too many complaints from the actors because it's mortgage money. they get out of franchises. They'll do a movie like a sucky movie, like a Transformers, and then do the more cerebral thing in the fall that will not make any money. But they have to balance. So you're going to see some top-flight action. I mean, hell, Glenn Close is going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy. But I hope Guardians of the Galaxy is a solid film because Marvel is doing it. Hopefully that will not screw up their run. You know, hopefully it'll be a decent film. Hopefully.
And also, let me say, I still think Captain America was fantastic. Winter Soldier. Absolutely knockout. Movie. I mean, it can be done, and it can be done well if you have a good script and you have directors who know what they're doing. And by the way, I have a friend who worked on Transformers 3, and boy, he has some stories to tell you. He has some stories to tell me about Michael Bay, which I cannot repeat. I will have to tell them to you in person.
Oh, boy.
yeah. The worst you can think of, yes. But Michael Bay is not really well-liked in Hollywood. He is not. That's not a secret. He is not a well-liked guy in the business by his crew.
He's proceeded to have.
But they tolerate him. They tolerate him because he makes a lot of money.
He's perceived as a hack. He's perceived as a hack.
It doesn't matter. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It comes down, as you said, to the box office. It doesn't – you know, it's like the same thing with Tim Story. People keep saying Tim Story is a hack. You know, who did Think Like a Man and Think Like a Man Too and Ride Along.
He's
a hack. Right, he's a hack. But his films, he still is grossing African-American film director, period. His films have grossed more money than Tyler Perry. This guy his films have grossed together at least over $1 billion. More than that. You know, but he's a hack. Doesn't matter. His films make money.
Well, what's that to say about us?
I'll say this much because we still have a lot of show to get to. I actually want to move around a little bit. I want to talk about. I'll take a quick musical break, Serge. You're more than welcome to be on hold, and I'll bring you back. I want to actually talk about a little bit of Horace Silver, a little bit of Bobby Womack, and then I want to talk about.
Can I say one thing? I did see this week. I may be the best film I've seen so far this year. Which is 180 degrees opposite of Transformers 4, and that's Life Itself, the Steve James documentary about Roger Ebert. I'm not saying this because I knew Roger. I was a friend of Roger. I saw what he went through. He invited me to his home. I've been to his parties. He was a super guy. But this is a really extraordinary film about a guy who really lived an extraordinary life, you know?
Yeah,
and what he faced.
He was definitely a lover of movies, though. I mean, he loved movies.
He was a lover of movies and sisters.
Well, we know that.
And so.
We know that.
Right. And who is she? She's wonderful. I know Chaz. I know her personally. I see her all the time. I saw her Monday. She is an absolutely warm, genuine person, and she still is. She's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person. But it's a wonderful movie. And it'll be available on video on demand. It's opening in theaters slowly every week, but also be available on video on demand. You got to check it out. You really do. You really got to check it out.
Well, I'm going to put you on hold to come back to it. We'll chop it up a little bit about that. What I want to do is give some respect to Horace Silver and, of course, the late Bobby Womack. And also I want to get into, I didn't advertise this, but Sirius XM's firing of Anthony Cumia, who I have picked up with on air myself. I gotta talk about this. We'll get into it. We're gonna go to a quick groove. We'll come back more with Mr. Sergio Mims, of course, from Shadow and Act, folks. Always check out Shadow and Act, and of course our regular crew, our own Enterprise crew, the Uncanny, and of course the Captain. Hold on, this is The Roots. Proceed 3 with the Bahamadia. talk about the lack of female representation in hip-hop, and we forget that we have them. We have them. They're talented, but we will not, the corporations will not let you hear them. Transformers 4 all over again. All right. The Roots, Proceed 3. We'll be right back.
Rock on to the break of dawn. Freak on to the early morn. Gaddafi and Sufjan. You got it going on. To my man Big Sean. You got it going on now. Yo, you got the Roots in the house. We also got Bahamadia in the house representing Lovely. With your ears now perceive, it's flavor you wouldn't believe as we proceed. I shall proceed and continue to rock the mic. I shall proceed and continue to rock the mic.
Let's kill off the small talk and just elaborate. The Roots collaborate, I say myself is rather great. How the words generate, whole crews disintegrate when I penetrate. As if and in the course, flow with intensive force. You better go and check your source about my texture course. Simplicity, sometimes complex, you might miss it. But after you critique it, you can kiss it. I'm assisted by your force, at least statistics. When I densify, nigga, simplify, you feel no sympathy. My lyrics send you on a permanent excursion. I never went to side when your lifespan was submerging. My style is urban, not suburban when I'm splurging. Gosh, these MCs I wash more than detergent. I can split the Red Sea with deadly. Take heed, Ill Adele style while I proceed.
I shall proceed and continue to rock the mic. I shall proceed and continue to rock the mic.
Bahamadie hits the melodies, melody, brand new, funk doobie, choosy with the tactics when I get raw, like dice, nice, with the flavor, do you want more, of the organics, pure, eargasmatic, from distortion to statics, automatic, systematic, I'm nasty at it, so hand me the 5 microphones like you did Illmatic, one time for the mind, rhyme me coming from an ill-adult state of mind, the world is mine, whole or halftime, all the time. And I shall proceed, I'm moving on baby, I shall proceed to remain on point like an infrared beam, succeed in chasing out the ultraviolet dreams, no mask like shorty, cause it's all about
I shall proceed and continue to rock the mic. I shall proceed and continue to rock the mic.
Black and handsome, holding MCs for ransom. Thoughts command some, is this a phantom cruise I'm angle? Y'all know my anthem ain't the Star Spangled. I hit you from the most...
Okay, we're back once again, giving you the best of urban alternative groove, progressive hip-hop, afro-punk, which is coming up next month to the Uncanny. I expect to see him there and a whole bunch of other friends in attendance. I'm excited. I believe that D'Angelo is going to be the top billing on that particular program. Fishbone, Unlocking the Truth, Michelle Indegiocello. Oh, boy. Ice-T. Ice-T and Body Count is going to be there. So we're talking about, when you talk about urban alternative, you're talking about a whole different set of folks at this shindig, and I'm going to be excited.
I don't know, because, you know, up the street again, MTV is going to be having their stuff, and they're going to have Nicki Minaj in 5 seconds this summer, and you best believe I'd be an Afropunk. Screw that.
guess what, Darryl, what we now call the BET Awards, at this show we call them the Mammies, not the Grammys, but the Mammies. And
so
not
like
unlike
Chris
the Mammies,
hold on
a second, Dale. Not unlike the Mammies, I expect that the MTV Awards is just going to be another minstrel show. And at the Mammies, Nicki Minaj talked about how authentic she is in comparison to Iggy Azalea. She is the authentic artist now. That's what Nicki Minaj is saying. She's an authentic minstrel. I'll give her that much. She's authentic.
Hold it. This is where Iggy Azalea is more authentic than Nicki Minaj. Iggy Azalea makes no secret of the fact that she patented herself after Nicki, after Madonna, but she also says, I learned my rap styling from Queen Latifah and Moni Love. That was the first album she had. That's what she says. So she says, image-wise, yes, I try to be this. Does she reach that? No, she doesn't. She's still a youngster. But Nicki Minaj says, I'm 100% natural, and I'm 100% authentic. Really,
yeah,
Nicki?
Really? She's as natural as her hair. Yeah. Sure. Whatever. Whatever. Okay, let's go forward. I was remiss for the last couple of shows and not mentioning the passing of the great Bobby Womack. A truly tragic slash interesting slash talented figure. Started out as a protege of the great Sam Cooke, who also died tragically. And actually, in my world, he was only 70. You know, 70, when people die in the late 60s, early 70s, people are asking, like, why? It's not assumed that, say, 50 years ago, that a person would die at 70 of natural causes. And in this case, he had such a drug-addled past that I suspect that might have what actually caught up with him. But he formally died from, I believe, colon cancer and also showed the signs of early dementia at 70. So it's heartbreaking to hear these things. I even mentioned this last week, that he had one of those powerful, really soulful voices that you just do not hear anymore. I don't care if the music changes. Just because the music changed, why does the octave range lessen? When I saw at the Mammies, and I'm going to keep on running that, by the way, until it becomes viral. When I saw at the Mammies last week, I saw Trey Songz, I saw Chris Brown, and August Alsina, and all of them are the same guy. It's the same dude. The same dude, the same lame vocal range, the same lame stage presence. Not Bobby Womack. Although Bobby Womack was a scoundrel. He was a scoundrel. I mean, very controversial for what he did in his young period. I mean, again, he was in his early 20s. He was the August Alsina of his day, in theory, although he could blow August Alsina away as far as vocal range. But as I said, he was the backing guitarist for Sam Cooke. But he was a protege. But when Sam Cooke died, he ended up marrying Sam Cooke's widow 3 months after his death. And again, he was 21 at the time, and Cooke's widow was 29. You know, for that time, you know, we're talking about the 60s, that was highly, highly controversial. But you couldn't take anything away from this man's talent. I mean, he pretty much stayed current till the present. I mean, to go from Sam Cooke to hits like If You Think You're Lonely Now, That's the Way I Feel About You, I Can Understand It. I mean, these are Across 110th Street from the movie. I mean, you're talking about a guy's career that spanned from the 50s to... from the late 50s, early 60s to the millennial period, with the cut I just played, which was a hit, definitely of an urban alternative hit with the Gorillaz. So that's really a testament to his talent. And that's what really gets me and our passion at this show. And I know the captain understands this. I know Sergio understands this. Kenny understands this, that there's always just ageism, especially in present-day music. Even in the hip-hop thing, they want folks like, I mean they, the current millennials, they want folks like Chuck D and Big Daddy Kane, those folks of that ilk, to just go away. They want you to just go away. If you're 35, 40, 45 plus, you have to sit down somewhere. And yet, folks like Mick Jagger, no one's telling him to go away. No one's telling Paul McCartney to go away. But in the black tradition, present day, they want you to go away. So I'm glad that Bobby Womack did not go away. So I applaud his talent. He was a troublesome figure, no less. I mean, and there's some other things I didn't even mention about some of the things with the drugs and his philandering. Very legendary philanderer. But I loved his voice. Matter of fact, he's highly influential, talking about spanning decades with KC and JoJo. KC sounds a lot like Womack, and I believe he covered Womack's If You Think You're Lonely Now. So I think that was in 94, 95. So he was influential even with different generations, and that's the testament of talent, is for someone to be able to influence. I would like to see if August Alsina influences anyone. Maybe a bowel movement. I don't think anything beyond that. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. Any thoughts on Bobby Womack from the crew, and then I go on to Mr. Horace Silver?
I think you pretty much covered it. I mean, it's with Womack, the thing he represented is that you could be soulful, you could be a devil. I use the word devil. I should just use, you could be mischievous, you could be soulful, but you could also be unique. You know, there were nice guy singers, there were bad boy singers, and then Bobby Womack had a category onto himself.
Yeah.
But you can't deny that the music is immortal. And folks will keep on trying to copy this as long as there is going to be R&B music. People will keep on trying to copy it. Rest in peace, Mr. Womack.
Yeah, you know what, Darren, I want the captain to weigh in as well, but, you know, you just reminded me about using the term immortal. That's so much about what it is. I mean, I played some remixes of James Brown on the Midweek and Review show, and I was just amazed at how current, you know, when you remix some of the stuff and you're able to kind of make it where it's able to stand toe-in-toe with the electronic music crowd, it's just so timeless. But that goes, it's a testament to the talent. See, when that talent starts to diminish, you're not going to be able to really muster up anything. But when you deal with a bass that's as strong, like Bobby Womack's voice is going to be around for centuries, and it's going to be utilized in different artistic ways because it is what it is. But I don't know about these other people who are so much about the now. You have to have a career that can span. Tina Turner's career has stood this test of time. So that's what I admire the most, is the ability to maintain. Captain, any thoughts?
Nothing to add, nothing to take away. You and Daryl summed it up very well, very nicely. That's it.
All right, briefly, I have to talk about this gentleman who died at the age of 85, from Norwalk, Connecticut, died in New Rochelle. That was his last haunting spot. Again, Mr. Horace Silver. What can I say about this gentleman? Across different genres, again, another giant in the music industry, notably for jazz, but he's done other musical art forms as well, Latin music, African music, also gospel. I knew him more for the soul jazz genre growing up in that, with that kind of music. Influenced by Lester Young is another character. He's a character in the jazz. I love Lester Young, the Prez, a colleague, a confidant, an associate of the great Billie Holiday. That is Lester Young, that is. So this is the circle that he was in. His big break came with working with the saxophonist Stan Getz, another heavyweight. Co-founded the Jazz Messengers with Art Blakey. I'm mentioning so many heavyweight names. When I think of someone like Entombe, who I was a guest on his show a few years back on Open Line, New York's Open Line, those who know James Entombe from Juicy Fruit, Entombe was a musical director with New York Undercover, most notably was a member of Miles Davis's band. His lineage goes with the Heath Brothers, and also Silver worked with Percy Heath. So, I mean, when you think about someone like him, worked under the Blue Note record label for many years. I don't know what to say about someone like this gentleman. I mean, he's been influenced, or, names like Art Tatum and Nat King Cole, the Thelonious Monk, all these gentlemen were in this gentleman's purview. So I don't want to go too deeply into this gentleman's work because it's just too lengthy. But I wanted to mention him because, again, he's a person of a certain standard. A jazz giant has left the building, not unlike on the soul end with Bobby Womack, and because of the current state of radio, there should be more done for these men, so we really know the gravity of their work and their influences and their legacy. I mean, perhaps I will do another show where I can really get into these gentlemen and really get into their legacy and what they really mean to black music. I mean, we just passed Black Music Month. The month of June was Black Music Month, and you would have to bring these gentlemen up in discussing black music. So with a heavy heart, again, Mr. Horace Silver, Mr. Bobby Womack, they left the building, but they will not be forgotten. That's it. Gentlemen, let's go to a little lighter note, somewhat lighter. I didn't mention this in the write-up for the show, but as I mentioned on Wednesday show, Captain, I can come up with, between the both of us, we can come up with 20 or 30 topics, and then 12 to 24 hours before we go on air, a deluge will just rain upon us, and you're left without recourse, but not in the sense that you have to mention this stuff. So I've been on the Open the Anthony show as a caller, and for whatever reason, they gave me 30 minutes of time. Captain knows this. I know I'm not the regular caller. I'm not the stereotypical black person calling up with that black intonation on the phone. So I'm not going to replay. I've played them before. So I've called up, and they know when I say Afro Nerd, they say, oh, I know who this guy is. So I give them respect for them also allowing me to kind of sell my wares on their program. But they're shot, and I would say they are contemporaries or not really. They're definitely influenced by Howard Stern. To their chagrin and to Howard's chagrin. Anthony of Opie and Anthony, Anthony Cumia. I believe these two gentlemen are Long Island natives also, which is interesting. They're from the Suffolk area location, just as Howard Stern is from Roosevelt, Long Island. And allegedly, in the Times Square area of New York, Mr. Cumia was taking photographs of something, and a woman of color had walked past his line of vision as he was taking a photograph, and she took offense to that. And from my understanding, Anthony was not intentionally photographing her, but she walked into his view, and she quickly told him to remove the tape and got rather belligerent with him. And so to the point where she physically accosted Anthony, and then allegedly other folks of color came in to become physical with this situation. If that's the story that he is told, so far there seems to be no visual evidence of this having taken place. But he went on a Twitter rant to talk about what just happened to him. Now, quite frequently, Anthony has these racial vents, rants, fits on air about people of color, black folk, and Latin folk not comporting themselves. And it's from a white perspective, and it gets into, from what I think, racial demagoguery. I have gone on a show to say, hey, I share some of your problems, or I share some of your concerns, but I don't look at it through a racial prism the way you do. And I don't want to rehash what I said to him on the show, but he used terms like savage about this woman, savage and some derogatory, some pejoratives. He didn't use the N-word, though. He knew not to go there. But he got fired anyway. $3 million gig, mansion in Roslyn, New York, multiple car collection, whatever. I know. I would try my best not to lose a $3 million a year gig. That's just me. You sent this story to me. I was aware of it, but you also sent this to my attention, Captain. What are your thoughts about this thing? Do you think he should have been fired? Do you think it was really racial? What's up?
Well, the first thing that came to my mind was that they were thinking about doing that to him for a very long time, and this was just the straw that broke the camel's back. That's what came to my mind. You know, you don't necessarily fire somebody over this that quickly, and he didn't directly really go racial. You know, he didn't really direct, unless, you know, you said this guy here is a pain in our backside for the longest. Now we got him on something. And also the climate now is that when you tweet things out, you have to be very careful. Twitter, Facebook, you have to be very careful. You can very easily lose your job. Now, if it just stays in the street, four-dimensional matrix, you don't have any problems. Once it hits Twitter, you see what happens. It goes everywhere. It goes all around the Internet. Everyone talks about it. And then it makes Sirius XM look very bad. And then, you know, you have to deal with people saying, oh, we're not going to subscribe to you anymore or anything like that. Ray. Boom. We got to let you go. That's ultimately what it comes down to. I don't really necessarily think it was totally racial. I don't really think it was really racial. I think more or less this is something that they had a problem with him for a while, and they were just thinking about. Now, when you want to get rid of somebody, but you don't have a reason, you start to look for the reason. Now the reason comes, and you say, okay, there you go. We can get rid of him based on this. Get him up out of here. Worst case scenario, if the relationship was good, this is me just thinking. I'm going, hey, you suspend him for a little while, and you bring him back. You know, he got suspended for his remarks on Twitter. Bring him back after 6 weeks. That's what you do. You don't necessarily say you're fired unless you really go in. That's me. That's all. Back over to you, Seraph on Earth.
Daryl, I'm sure you're familiar with Opie and Anthony. What are your thoughts about? I mean, they're shock jocks. I mean, you know.
This was Imus Part 2. This was Imus Part 2. If people remember with Imus with the Rutgers basketball players, he made a comment about
hoes.
Okay, he made a comment like that. Now, Imus hated everybody, but that was his persona on air. Everybody, hell, he ripped Jewish people more than anybody else.
That's true.
Jewish people love the show, you know. But he makes this comment. All of a sudden, black people, oh, we're offended, da-da-da. Who've never listened to his show, but you're offended. And here comes the outcry. From what I've read about the situation, from Anthony's side, what he wrote, that sounded like Boondocks, an N-word moment involving him. Where he went wrong, and people get on me all the time for saying this, I refuse to be a part of Twitter. I hate Twitter with a passion. But once you put it out there, there is no 30-second wait button. You put something out on Twitter, it is out there.
This is true.
You could say you're going to retract it all you want. You have a $3 million job. Put the phone down, stew in your own house, and then come back ready for work. Once you put it out there, guess what? There's no such thing as freedom of speech. That's a lie. Anything you say out there has consequences later on. There's no such thing as saying something hurtful. There's no such thing saying something hateful. There's no such thing as saying something and then go later, oh, I was only joking. You're free to say it. But also, guess what? They're free to act and give you the dire consequences to it. Once he tweeted, good night. It was over. It was a wrap. Just because people that don't listen to your show see your tweet from other people and see, I knew they were racist. And they go to your sponsors. You see, this is what you're backing. You better back out now. I have this list of names of people that won't shop in your company anymore. Then the sponsor goes back to the radio station. Yo, how could you let this guy be on air? Get him out or we're pulling out our dollars. And guess what? Anthony, bye. Nice knowing you. Just like Captain said, all they needed was an excuse. All they needed something was to lit the short fuse. This lit that short fuse. Like, people, I'm prejudiced. People, I can be racist. People, I can be sexist. But you know what? So can 99.9% of people out there be the same way. We all have weak. Problem is when you take that weak moment and you go into a public forum, you're likely to jeopardize everything you've worked for, stood for, everything you earn wise, everything your reputation wise, all of that gets put on the line. Kids, adults, old people understand this. Donald Sterling, he found that out. Charles Barkley found that out to a point. You know? Now, Anthony, you're finding it out too. Doesn't matter who you are. Once you say something racist in any multimedia platform, it sticks to you like a skunk spray. And now you're asked out of a $3 million job. Do I feel some sympathy? I feel some sympathy. But you know what? When I get pissed, I don't immediately go online just because I don't want to do that. Because once it's there, it's out there. Put the thing down. Take a walk. Put the thing down. Sit in a darkened room. Put the thing down and just yoga meditate for a while. Once you let it out on air, guess what? It's there all time. We were just talking about Bobby Womack and how his music is going to be immortal. That's because somewhere it's always either on tape, on vinyl, being broadcast, on the net. It lives forever. These tweets are going to live forever, Anthony. And now you're going to have to deal with it. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, I have to say this. Hey, Cat.
Can I add something?
Sure.
Another thing that they'll turn around and add and say, well, you know, Sirius, we're dealing here with subscribers, all right? That's one thing. So when you say certain things on the show, because sometimes the show does get crazy, you know, it could be taken a lot of different ways, but you're subscribed to it. You know, that's what you wanted. So it's okay. Once you do that, it's somewhat okay, you know? It's like the unwritten rule that is written in. But now what is Twitter? Twitter is the public forum. Changes the dynamics a lot, you know, from their standpoint. And that's what the executives say. That's how they use it. And to flip it back up on you. So, yeah, I know, you know, you do your show this way. But, you know, Twitter, you know, so it's really a free forum, and, you know, it's there for everybody. We just can't have that. Got to let you go. Back over to you, sir, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, well, you know, hold on one second. Let me see if I give a look.
But when the news gets a hold of that, they leave it out. I don't know why.
Listen, you got DJ in Queens, a black guy.
All right.
DJ, what's up, brother?
Thanks for the intro. Wow.
Well, you know what? The only reason I say that is because it's important to the discussion. When we're just shooting the shit, it doesn't matter. That's all. I'm sorry.
I think people could figure it out.
Well, listen.
Jesus, Anthony.
I'm an avid listener to your program.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, sir.
And it's hard to listen, to be honest with you, because it seems to be quite a bit of I think
of factual statistics.
No.
All right.
Don't try to peg me. Okay.
Okay.
I don't. That's one thing. Yeah. It seems like you have a habit of saying black this, black that.
Yep.
And I try to deracialize some of this stuff.
All right.
Because it's more about being. It's more about behavior.
How do you deracialize? Great word, by the way. Deracialize. How do you do that when these cops are constantly being shot by black males during traffic stops.
You know what? It's a lengthy thing. I've told you before. I've played them up
constantly. Come on now. If it was constantly, they'd all be dead.
You know what I mean?
Wait, like he never saw cops. How many black people you saw in Cops in the first two seasons? Those are all white hillbillies attacking those cops on Fox.
that was his first mess up. You have to say, from a statistical standpoint, when there's more black people here in the inner city shooting white cops than you have white people shooting white cops. That's how you have to frame it. Once you start like that, it's like, they would all be dead. Come on. Constantly shooting cops. Come on.
See, we do something like that, we get those calls that make fun that we use the N-word all the time and everything is racial. You know, we can't do that. They can. They're on Sirius. That's great. You can do that. But understand, when Afro-Nerd comes on and you're trying to tell this to Afro-Nerd's face, he's going to go, whoa, 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 brother, slow your roll. Understand this
well,
now.
Well, you saw that. You saw that, right?
Hey, that's it.
Yeah.
Constantly. They're under barrage right now. They're constantly.
Well, you know, that's what the whole crux of his situation is, that you don't know if he has this sense or he has a sense of racial paranoia. That's the one thing. Like you are a guy that makes $3 million a year. You live in a very moneyed area of Long Island. How much interaction do you need to have with black folks? Really? You know, who are you mixing up with? So, you know, you have to correct these folks. I mean, later into the conversation, I went into this whole thing about, you know, we talked about Obama being elected and mostly black people voted for Obama. I said, well, what about all the 43 other presidents that were white? Who voted for them in the majority? White folks don't vote for white people? Well, we don't really think about it that way. Well, maybe you should. President Obama could not even have a black vice president or a vice president. You couldn't even have a black or Hispanic person of color. Too much color on the ticket for white folks' comfort. I said, but a white guy can choose another white guy and has been doing it since time immemorial. And no one looks at that as being tribal or racial. So when I brought that up, they scratched their heads. Oh, I never looked at it that way. Maybe you should. Well, maybe what they should do is, have the uncanny, have the captain, have Afro-Nerd, hire us as replacements for $1.2 million. That's how you correct the situation.
I'm turning the show upside down. But you see, here's the problem. Thinking the way he thinks, Opie and Anthony do live remotes at, like, high schools and stuff all the time. I don't want to go to a white high school because that's where all the shootings happen. Using that line of thinking, I don't want to do this. Oh, we got to do something on Wall Street. I don't want to be all around all those guys. I'll get my wallet stolen. That's the problem with looking everything at a colored prims, people. When you start down that path, you might as well stay on it because there's no way off. That stuff sticks to you.
Constantly.
Right?
Oh, man.
cue the Street Fighter music. We're getting started. We are getting started. Let's go.
Here comes a police officer. He's under barrage constantly.
All right. Whatever happens to Opie and Anthony, I mean, I will say this, and then we'll move along. He did say, well, first of all, he gave the impression that he was unaffected, like, you know, whatever, I lost my job. He said that this isn't like it was before where you don't have options. So I perceive he may go the Adam Carolla route and set up his own podcasting business, which could be lucrative if you have the numbers, and we have yet to see if Opie follows suit, because it was Anthony that was fired, not Opie. So you have Opie and you have Jim Norton that's also on this show. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if the whole operation closes. And hey, I would think maybe they do need a replacement. We will see. I'll throw something out there. We'll see what happens. Is it, but I'm intrigued. I will say that much. Whatever.
Constantly.
Constantly. All right, moving things along, let's pick up the pace. Let's go in a different direction again, folks. This is the Grindhouse mixtape slash mashup show. At the top of every month, we do a show where the uncanny sits in for the entire broadcast, and we really get a chance to chop it up on pop culture, pulp culture, as well as political stuff. Let's go to the pulp culture, then we're going to go to President Obama. Let's go to this notion, since we spoke about Marky Mark slash Mark Wahlberg in Transformers, there's a new rumor out now, Darryl. I think you might have heard this, that there's more talk about, I mean, they've been talking about this thing for years, about a big screen version or adaptation of the $6 Million Man. Lee Majors, the Bionic Man, obviously because of... Because of financial matters, it can no longer be six. You would be lucky to get a finger for $6 million in the Bionic world in 2014. So I'm assuming they would just call him the Bionic Man or at least put him in the billion-dollar range, maybe the $75 billion man or something like that. Marky Mark has been connected to this project. What are your thoughts about this? Isn't it? I mean, I heard Jim Carrey was connected to this, and they were probably going to make it into some goofy comedy. Thank God that never
came. Well, they already had that. It's called Inspector Gadget.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but this would be, I mean, come on. This would definitely be the TV show on big screen. What are your thoughts about the way we would look at it, as Lee Majors or as Steve Austin? And not Star Call Steve Austin. I mean, Steve Austin.
Well, I look at it this way. You know what? Talk is cheap. I'm using the same Batman Superman thing. This has been going around for about 6 years now. Ever since Dynamite was rumored to retake, to renew the property, and then 4 years ago when Dynamite Entertainment actually renewed the property, it became big thing. Then 3 years ago when the Bionic Woman pilot came on, everybody was good. Immediately, without even seeing Bionic Woman, when are we getting $6 Million Man, the movie? That took off again. So you know what? Prove it. Step up to the plate. Get me a director. Get me a producer. Prove it. You know, talk is cheap. I'll use the same thing that I've used with Batman Superman. Talk is cheap. Put your money, put the efforts where your mouth is. Back to you, Afrinan.
Yeah. I'm looking on the internet now. There's quite a few blogs, quite a few news sites that are for the story. So I'm going to just read a little bit to give further clarification for the audience. I loved the $6 Million Man as a kid. You know, the music was iconic, treated deadpan. I mean, you look at it now, it comes off campy. But if you're looking at it, I guess, through the eyes of a child, I thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I don't think I ever missed an episode of the $6 Million Man. And by connection to the Bionic Woman, I loved that stuff. And actually, I was very happy with the Bionic Woman coming to television a few years back. I did not dislike it. I just don't understand why it didn't work. I know that the folks behind the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, they were behind this reboot. Perhaps it would have done better on Sci-Fi Network as opposed to NBC. But and also was a way that for Isaiah Washington, who had just was canned rather unceremoniously from,
Grey's Anatomy.
Yes, Grey's Anatomy. When he was canned from that, he quickly was attached to this, and I thought this was going to work out in some way, but it didn't. How long was it on? It wasn't even on a season, was it?
No, it was like seven episodes, and then pulled.
You know what? I may have to actually revisit the seven episodes, but was it purely low ratings, or just it was too cerebral? What happened?
Look, the same thing. Here's the difference. The same thing that happened to Bionic Woman happened to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., okay? The problem was Bionic Woman didn't have a major movie franchise behind it. And they did. And even though it had David Eck and the guys from Battlestar Galactica behind it, remember, NBC had Battlestar Galactica, and they shuffled it off to Sci-Fi. And then when it got big on Sci-Fi, NBC was like, okay, it's big on Sci-Fi. That's why everybody getting hot and getting, oh, this is going to be awesome, talking about the Constantine coming up on NBC. You better hope that the same guys in charge are the same guys that keep Grimm on the air. Because shows like this need time to develop and build it up, build up the mythology, get people interested. You need time, all right? NBC is the type of channel, or used to be the type of channel, you got 3 episodes, prove what you can do. Oh, it didn't work, bye. And that's what happened to Bionic Woman. And that's something you need to build the mythology, you need to build up everything behind it. You can't just, oh, it's going to be a hit right away. Sure, the Battlestar Galactica people watched because of our personal loyalty. Some of the old-time Bionic Woman fans watched. But since you didn't have Steve Austin in it, since you didn't have any of that bigger world connection thing being established, it got drowned out. So, hey, talk about a big movie, Bionic Man movie, all you want. Again, this will be year 6. Talk about it again. Go ahead. You guys can keep on talking about it. I'll pay attention, and I'll give credence to it once I see there's a producer, once I see there's a director, and you give me Mark Wahlberg, but hey, I just saw him in Transformers 4. Back to you, Afrinus.
All right, and also I just remember that Katie Sackhoff was also in that Bionic Woman reboot. I wish it would have worked. I really do. I was supporting that particular thing. Let me go into this article at WeGotThisCovered.com. WeGotThisCovered.com. It says, they can rebuild them. Well, you know that infamous line. They can rebuild them. They have the technology. But will audience even care? That's the question that Universal is facing now. As the tracking board reports that the studio is trying yet again to assemble a reboot of the beloved 1974 series, The $6 Million Man. The remake of The $6 Million Man has been in the works for decades. First came a screenplay from Kevin Smith in the 1990s that he eventually adapted into a comic book titled The Bionic Man. Then came a comedic take starring Jim Carrey from the Hangover writer-director Todd Phillips, followed by an attempt in 2006 from Richard Anderson, and we know who he is. That's Oscar Goldman, if I remember correctly, who had a supporting role in the original series that never materialized due to a fight between Miramax and Universal over the rights to the property. Universal then tried again in 2011 with Bryan Singer in the director's chair and Leonardo DiCaprio in the lead role. Now, you know what? I didn't know about that. I'm not so sure about Bryan Singer, but I would have been on board with that combination. I'm not going to lie. That sounds intriguing. Word has it that the studio is giving the remake another shot, this time with the intention of reuniting Lone Survivor director Peter Berg with Mark Wahlberg. Berg will produce – well, Peter Berg is a legend. He's been around for a while, isn't he? Or am I getting my Bergs mixed up? All right. Berg will produce and possibly direct the film, and Wahlberg in consideration to star as the titular astronaut-turned-cyborg. For those unfamiliar with this, well, I'm not going to go into it. Everybody knows about Steve Austin and yada, yada, yada. You know what? The Leonardo DiCaprio and Bryan Singer thing, that would have been – I don't see how that would not have done something. Groaning.
Peter Berg, I know he's done some stuff. Remind me again, who directed Planet of the Apes with Mark Wahlberg?
That was Tim Burton.
That was Tim Burton? Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to know, because if Tim Burton couldn't get Mark Wahlberg to work in a vehicle, Peter Berg's going to do it?
Okay,
I'm
now,
just
now
playing
I know,
devil's advocate. I'm playing devil's
now
advocate.
Now I know who Peter Berg is. I just looked him up. Yeah, Peter Berg is an actor.
30-something.
He's a young guy. Well, he's actually 50. He looks younger, though. He directed The Rundown, which is was in that. Friday Night Lights, the TV series, I believe, which was still heavily lauded.
Yeah, good.
Battleship, not so much. That was a
I was waiting for him to get to the clunker.
But he also did Hancock.
He's
kind of, and you know, we didn't talk about Hancock too. Allegedly, is being has been greenlighted. I mean, it was a $600 million movie. Why wouldn't it be greenlighted? Why did it had to be scheduling or something?
Wait, did you really just ask why a superhero movie with a black lead wasn't greenlighted? Did you really, Captain? Did you hear that? Did he just ask that?
No, I asked it. I asked it. To be fair, I asked it on the heels of a $600 million payday.
Okay, and did the words black lead mean anything to you and superhero? Remember, lead superhero can't exist.
No, but wait a minute. We're still talking about a proven black lead. You know, Will Smith actually does international box office. This is a different animal.
I would be
with you if it's anybody else. But once you make that money, stuff gets greenlighted. Maybe this was an issue of scheduling on a part, because if you look at all the movies that Will Smith, if you go into his IMDb page, he has worked on the books allegedly going into another 10 or 15 years. His attachment to properties. That's how bankable this guy is.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
I'm just giving you the responses that certain comic book heads and stuff have thrown back in my face when I ask about Black Panther and Falcon and thing. I'm just giving you that response right back. I was being totally sarcastic with that. I still am being totally sarcastic with that, because until I see Hancock 2 be greenlighted, it goes right back to the old stereotypes again.
Wait on this. I mean, $600 million is $600 million. I think it might be something different in this case. I could be wrong.
Well, let's talk about the $6 billion man, or $6 billion man. Well, you see, Hollywood likes to, you know, rehash these properties, because in their mind they think it's a safer situation, you know. So they always like to use things that were out already. They take a novel, they remake this, they remake that, you know. They do, but they don't do too many original screenplays, you know. Everything is either some type of novel or remake this, or it's some comic book. This is what they're doing these days, you know, or maybe it's a comedy. Comedy, you know, and even sometimes when it's comedy, when you really check out the theme is coming from something else that we already know.
Britain.
There you go. So the problem with this is that the property hasn't been out there in so long. Is it a dead property? No, I don't think it's a dead property. But, you know, if you're going to spend a lot of money, let's say $100 million, $150 million in production and everything, you have to go about doing it a certain way. And a certain way is you have to bring in Lee Majors, I would think, and then you would also have to bring in Lindsay Wagner somehow, figure it out with your writing. So at least the people that are 40 to 70, who a lot of times don't necessarily go to the movies on a regular basis, you know, maybe once every 8 weeks that crowd goes to the movies, you know, or something like that, you would get them in the box office. You get them at least. Then, you know, you bring in, you got Mr. Mark Wahlberg and everything else, and you write a very good script on that theme, and then you go from there. Then you could probably have something that could be rather lucrative. Then also maybe put in a couple of Asian people. You know, you get a couple of Asian people from over, you know, from China that are well known, and you also go that route. I'm just working it through, working through my head. How can this work? You know.
So it can't be Crazy Eyes from Orange Is the New Black.
Gets
caught up, then has to go undergo the treatment and make it into a Suicide Squad type thing. You run mission for us, or we'll explode the bomb in your head. No, that won't work.
No. Not if you want to make it work. At this given time. If they did this 20 years ago, you could have played around with it a lot more, you know. But at this given time in 2014, I just think that's the way to go with it if you're going to do it. And you could use Mr. Wahlberg, you know, Mr. Marky Mark or whatever. You could use him. He could work with it, provided that you have, you know, Lindsay Wagner, all right, active role, and Lee Majors in the movie. And then you go from a standpoint, yeah, we were the $6 million. You are the upgrade. And then you work from there, you know, and then you just, you know, you just build off of that, and you make it into something, and then you go from there. Then maybe you might have something decent that the people would care about to say, hey, okay, let me go see this. But as of right now, the way it's set up, who cares, man? You better off watching the reruns, you know, and check it out.
And the other bad sign is, yo, Intelligence didn't get renewed on CBS, all right? Chuck lasted 4 seasons, but Jake 2.0 lasted only one. You know, the other stuff with this premise hasn't lasted too long on TV. So movie-wise,
Intelligence wasn't bad. Wasn't bad show. Wasn't bad. It was decent. It was better than Almost
great.
Human. Better than Almost Human.
Oh, here we go.
Well, you know, I'll say this much just for feces and giggles. You know, we see that Academy Award-winning actress Sandra Bullock, you know, she was the Bionic, the 2.0. You know, you could actually go to Google or it'll probably be on YouTube somewhere. Is that when they did a reboot of sorts, I think in the late 80s, late 80s, they did a reboot where you had an older modeled Bionic woman and Lee Majors, and Sandra Bullock was the 2.0, where I think she was running like 300 miles an hour. I mean, I loved it. Just for S and giggles, I loved it. So they did that before. And look where you end up. Sandra Bullock is like the creme de la creme. So you never know where you end up, where she was a movie of the week of a sci-fi 70s reboot, and now she's getting Academy Awards. So that's how Hollywood works. You never know where you could end up.
No worries. We shouldn't even worry about this because we're getting Sharknado 2 at the end of July. There's no hope.
But you know what? Listen, you know what, though? I respect that. I respect that because everybody knows that's a goof. That's meant to be silly. It's another thing where they make a movie that's meant to be taken seriously, and it's as goofy as Sharknado. That's what's really
the
problem.
Sharknado. I like Sharknado.
I do too.
Yeah.
Sharknado is meant to be off the wall, balls of the wall parody. But when you come out with something and you spend $200 million on the film and it's just as goofy as that, what drugs are these people smoking? That is the crux of Hollywood. That's what's scary. So in all respect to Mark Wahlberg, I have to remember his breadth of work, because you know you see him in stuff like Transformers, but then you forget that he was in The Departed, that he was in Boogie Nights, that he was in The Italian Job. So he's done. He was in The Fighter. So you know he has talent. It's just that I guess in his case, you have to give him the material. If it's crappy, he's going to do it. If it's not crappy, I mean, you know, I forget that he's a legitimate guy.
And it's also the director, too. It's So that has a lot to do with it, you know.
What you hoped was that when you saw Mark Wahlberg's name attached to Transformers 4, right? You hope that Bay wouldn't write the same old stereotypes, because you look at Mark Wahlberg and how he can perform in these action movies, and if you want to do it with a little comedic bent, look at him in The Big Hit. You know, you see that? Okay, tailor your script or tailor that character to him. No, they wrote him like a 29-year-old Shia LaBeouf. That's what they wrote it as. Like, we couldn't get Shia. He couldn't age enough to have a teenage daughter. So, hey, Mark, here you go.
That would sound like he's talking to a 14-year-old that just went, Marcus, what are you doing? I told you to do this.
Exactly. I just had my Jerry Seinfeld moment. Well, what the hell is this?
It's good,
my
Dallas.
Voice is
good.
Cracking now. This is where we're at. I just got Michael Bayed again. Again I got Michael Bayed. This
good.
Human must die. Yes, Optimus, you should have shot the director's chair and put us out of our misery and killed Michael Bay once and for all. We won't even bring up the Dredgery, that's the last ship. I'm sorry, Adam Baldwin. You know I'm a Firefly Serenity fan, but Adam, why Bay? God.
Hey,
man.
It was good to see the Dinobots, okay? All right? It was good to see you.
on that note, let's go to a groove, because I don't really know this. Let's go to a groove. When we get back, we're going to go to something more serious, and then we're going to go back to pulp. Quick groove, and then I want to talk about, is Obama really the worst president since World War II?
No.
No. I agree, but we have to say something in between. Let's go to a quick Afro-punk groove. This is the London Souls. Stand up, stand up. We'll be right back. Let's groove. We'll be right back. again, folks, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk and, of course, the uncanny Daryl B. That was the London Soul. Stand up, give you the very best of urban alternative groove, Afro-punk, black rock. You know what we do? We play the unconventional, the stuff that conventional radio refuses to absolutely play. So we're going to give it to you right in your face. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Before the break, and excuse my voice, I'm still kind of working out this cold. I no longer have the cold, but my voice is scratchy nevertheless. I'm a bit perturbed by this notion. There's a Quinnipiac University poll came out a few days ago that posited that our sitting president, President Barack Obama, is the worst president since World War II. That he's the worst. So I'm going to read a little bit about this. I didn't have enough time to pull up any audio, but I don't think it's necessarily necessary. But I'm intrigued. It says, President Obama, this is from ABC News, President Obama is considered to be the worst president since World War II, narrowly beating out George W. Bush, according to a new Quinnipiac University poll released today. Obama was the choice of 33% of those polled for the selection of worst president, the largest percentage of any of the 12 presidents since 1945 when the war ended. The poll asked respondents, thinking about the United States presidents we have had since World War II, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, JFK, Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, and so forth, which one would you consider the best president? The next question asked respondents, which one would you consider the worst president? Ronald Reagan topped the best president list, followed by Bill Clinton and John F. Kennedy. Obama was named worst president by a narrow margin over George W. Bush, with Richard Nixon trailing in a distant third. Oh, man, I can't even read the rest of this. If Richard Nixon, who narrowly missed being impeached for breaking into the Democratic headquarters, the whole Watergate scandal, the lying, the taping, if you factor in Nixon's involvement with, well, even if you consider Lyndon Baines Johnson, although he was responsible for writing in the Civil Rights Act, so he has to be applauded for that, although he used the N-word personally quite frequently, but that's another story. Between JFK, Lyndon Baines Johnson, and Richard Nixon, well, actually, LBJ and Richard Nixon with their involvement in the Vietnam War and Watergate, we're supposed to forget that period. We're supposed to forget that. And goes directly to Obama as being the worst president, who inherited the mess from George W. Bush. It makes it a joke. We have former Vice President Dick Cheney weighing in on a horrible job that President Obama is doing in Iraq, when Cheney is responsible for being in Iraq in the first place, and we're supposed to forget that. It makes this as goofy as a Transformers film. Maybe goofier. I don't know what to say about this. I do know what to say about this. And then I want the crew to weigh in on this as well. I'm going to say one last thing, and that's it. I'm not a fan of absolute progressive politics. I'll say that and that's not everyone knows this. I'm not a fan of it, and I think that in reality, most folk with sense are not ideologues. They're not one way or the other. They're probably more moderate. Most folks are moderate. Obama has tried to fashion himself as a centrist to begin with. He's trying to fashion himself in the vein of former President Clinton. He's tried to. But between the media and the right, the hard right, the neocons, they more or less have tried to make him into some kind of rabid liberal. And when you factor in his race, that when he, just as an example, I think a few months ago when he visited the country of Belgium, he visits Belgium, and one of the top newspapers in that country, as he's visiting the country, Photoshop image of the president and the first lady as simians. I can't take people seriously. I can't take you seriously. When I see, when you see other politicals in this country who very blatantly go into racial diatribes about the president, racial talk, you lose credibility to me. Party didn't come to fruition until January 2009. So all that governmental intervention and tax raising, the critique or the criticisms that were out there before this sitting president took office, that wasn't enough to compel the development of the Tea Party, but it just so happens to coincide with his first day in office. I find that unnerving, and no one mentions this, that the complaints that they had, that they've levied against this administration, January 2009, those complaints didn't exist 2008 or before that. Why didn't the Tea Party come into fruition then, when the economy actually collapsed? I don't know. You lose credibility when you factor in this man's race. I'll say it straight up, and I don't think that he's not beyond criticism. Definitely, but you lose me when you bypass a man that was that had to resign for fear of impeachment. That's it. Cap, let's go to the Cap first. Cap, what are your thoughts?
Well, let's use inductive reasoning, not deductive. We'll use inductive reasoning pertaining to these polls, quote-unquote polls. So they're saying going back to since 1945, you have to be careful when you're dealing with polls, because polls, as per rule, they're normally slanted, and the public just takes the polls a lot of times, not all the time, as gospel, because it goes across the screen, you observe it, you know, it's on MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, and you say, wow, look what's going on. But now let's look at this a little bit closer. Now, in my opinion, using inductive reasoning, they didn't ask people between 20 to 40 years of age. My opinion, this is a poll between 50 to 70-year-olds, because if you're going back to 1945, most people, unless, of course, you're a historian and you study history, which most people don't. Some of you do, listening. You'll look things up and you'll see what's going on, what happened 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, even longer generations, you know, before you. You will do that, but most people don't. Most people, if you were born 1980, as far as you go back is 1960. If you were born 1960, as far as you're going to go back is 1940. Most people, that's what they do. So my opinion, because of that, you're dealing with people between 50 to 70 years of age. This could be wrong, but this is using inductive reasoning. Also, too, we live in a time period where everything is the latest versus the greatest. In this case, the latest would refer to the worst. What do I mean by that? Let's say when you have an athlete, they perform a great play now in the modern-day era. Everybody rushes to say that they're the best. They're not the best. You have all these other people that did great things. You have to look and measure a body of work to determine greatest, very good, and everything else. You do one thing, oh, that's the best ever. No, you're not the best, you're the latest. So that being said, Obama right now is the latest person doing policies that this group of people who the poll interviewed do not like. All right, next. Next thing with Obama. Obama may very much be the most prolific towards doing the banking agenda, all right, because he is the latest. You know, all presidents after JFK pretty much were following the banker agenda more and more and more and more as it went along. So that being said, you put all those factors together and using inductive reasoning, not deductive reasoning, it's not a fair poll. Now, I always say fairness is an illusion of the weak to protect you from the strong to no avail. When you have power, you do what you want. The pollers who don't like Obama, they did what they want here using inductive reasoning and came up with a lot of malarkey and slanted the poll, in my opinion, using inductive reasoning. That's how they came up with those factors. That's just me going through the steps and reasoning out. Just throw this underneath the rug. Screw these people. There you go. To get a more accurate polling, you have to go through all different demographics and everything else in order to get a more accurate polling. That's all. Back over to you, Seraphil Nerd.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to hear what Daryl has to say. And I have one more thing to kind of tie a ribbon around this thing. A couple of things I thought about as you were speaking. Daryl, what are your thoughts about this poll? I mean, how do you feel about it?
My thoughts about this poll is essentially a combination of the ones you two just made. But I will say this. This reminds me of Boondocks Season 3, Episode 1. Huey says, I don't like President Obama. Everybody gets shocked. Oh, why are you shocked? Why are you shocked? Like, he ain't going to do everything for us. We got to do for ourselves. And then you can look at what the president does. All right? So that's how I take this poll. What? Obama was supposed to get into office and everything was supposed to be perfect again? Really? After the messes that Bush had, after some of the messes that Clinton had, after Elder Bush, after Reagan, after Carter, that's five straight presidents where parts of the economy were infinitely effed up. And Obama was supposed to get in and everything would be normal, with not only the opposing party but members of his own party against him, where he's tried to do initiatives to get people to work and get people free health care, and that's been shot down by the insurance, by the labor force, by hospitals. With all of that against him, he was supposed to make your lives better. Right. Okay. You know what? Let me see what the next president does. But I will say this. If I was President Obama, I would go right in and walk into one of those Tea Party meetings with a baseball bat. Secret Service guys. Sit down right there. I'm right here now. You've been saying all this stuff behind my back. Say it to my face. Matter of fact, the cameras are on. Go ahead. How you cure the nation? I'm right here. Let me know. Holla at your prez. I'd do right that. Walk right into one of their meetings where they're burning him in effigy and throwing darts at his face. Do that. Walk right in. Here I am. Don't tell me that the government doesn't know where these meetings are happening at. Here I am. You got your chance. Here's your shot. Come on. Talk. Let's see if you got the cojones to say it to my face. He should do that at Fox News. Walk right in when Ann Coulter's doing her bile. Bam. You want me, madam? Let me hear how you're going to solve the country's problems. And let me give you my situation. The Democratic Party doesn't trust me. The Republican Party hates me. This channel takes everything I say out of context. How are you going to solve everything? This is one time I wish he became the angry black man in office. And let's see what happens.
We got about 3 minutes, unfortunately. I would disagree with the angry black man thing. We've seen plenty of angry black man, Daryl, and that doesn't seem to work for anybody. That we're hearing that, he needs to keep it very Asian. Do not be an angry black man. I think it sounds good, but we've never seen the angry black man actually work. It just allows us to.
I'm just saying he's been so milquetoast with this, and you know what? It's great. Turn the other cheek. That is great.
Nah,
that's
playing
sentiment.
Listen, he's playing chess, man. He's playing chess. But let me say this quickly because we got only a few minutes remaining. I did want to say this. His presidency also has to be critiqued as a presidency that is very much in the 21st century with a different kind of media. Because if you think of JFK having to deal with Twitter and Facebook and Internet, and you have someone like Marilyn Monroe seeing you, Mr. President, how would that have been perceived? I mean, back then the media knew what to say, what not to say. It was everything is up for scrutiny. You never had this much access to anyone. Even with our so-called celebrity set and people are losing gigs. We just talked about them. They're losing gigs because they have too much proximity, too close of a proximity with the common man. And that's exactly what has happened with this presidency in comparison with other presidencies of the past. Even with Clinton. Clinton was the president that introduced the internet theoretically. But the internet was still in its infancy. It's nowhere near where it is now. So even that alone makes things a bit different as to how you have to perceive this man. When you factor in race, factor in what he inherited, as well as this new media, I don't think the polling can even be considered a fair polling. And what Natasha said about demographics, that wasn't factored in either. I mean, come on. It is what it is. We may have to revisit it. We still didn't even get to half the topics that we were supposed to talk about this evening, gentlemen. It is what it is. We're closing shop. We'll do it again on Wednesday. Now, as always, man, definitely a much-needed addition to our crew here. And we'll do it again on Saturday. But for Wednesday, we have the midweek, and then Saturday we'll do it again. Going out on let's go out on Booker Jones and the Roots, Rent Party. See you on Wednesday, 7:30. It's been real. Thanks, Darryl.
All right.